Welcome, everybody, to episode 288 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, September 20th, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, with a broken ankle, and joining me is my co-host, J-Trip, or Triple J, or John James Jacoby, or, you know, insert cool name here.
I've also had a broken ankle. I mean, not at the same time, but I understand what you're going through, man. That's a tough situation. I don't think I've heard the real day-to-day story of how this happened, so I'm excited to hear about that.
Yeah,
I mean, okay, I'm not excited that it happened, but I'm excited to hear the story.
I mean, all the doctors have laughed at me after what I told them, so you could join the club. anyways, folks, glad to be back with you here. We had to take last week off. Last week was actually supposed to be sort of a vacation week for me because it was the week of my wedding anniversary. However, I spent the week in bed with a cast around my ankle. It turns out last Saturday, no, I think it's going on 2 weeks now. Not last Saturday, the Saturday before. I was on my way to bed. It was 5 a.m. I saw the motion detector light on. I said, okay, that's interesting. And I saw this big deer eating our rose bush, and I didn't take too kindly to that. So I opened up the door, and I chased after it. And, you know, that's probably not a good thing to do when the grass is slippery. There's dew everywhere. I'm in my slippers, and I ended up, I think I hit a divot or a hole, and next thing you know, my ankle's broken. And I'll never, you know, I always imagine myself going through life without breaking any bones. Usually people break their collarbone. You know, if they're involved in sports, the collarbone's like the first thing to go because it's pretty weak. But, you know, I always thought that the most physical thing I do is yard work. So, I mean, how am I going to break a bone doing yard work? But evidently chasing a deer at 5 a.m. in the dark, that's all it took for me to join the club of breaking a bone. So, you know, I wasn't in as much pain as I thought I would be when I broke my ankle. I crawled across the yard. I crawled into bed, and my wife says, hey, there's something wrong with you because you're breathing kind of weird. I said, honey, I think I broke my ankle. She goes, what? You know, and she wants to go to the emergency room. I said, no. Let's see what happens here in a few hours because if I broke something, I think I should be in a lot more pain than what I'm in now. So we slept for a few hours, and when I woke up, I was still in some mild pain. And it turns out most of the Express Claire clinics around here, their x-ray departments close on Saturdays at noon. So I found one that opens at 4. We went there, and they confirmed that I did a number on my, the tibia and the fibia. They were both fractures, except one was a clean break.
Yeah.
And it was so bad that they forwarded the information to a what's the person who deals with what's the name? Begins with a P.
A person. I don't know which person you thought. Like the.
Hold on. Let me see here. I can think of it really quick.
Unless you have these terms written down somewhere. Either way, long story short.
Anyway, the person deals with joints or whatever else, but they said it was so bad, they scheduled me for surgery on Wednesday, and surgery was a very scary experience for me because I knew it had to be done. It was the only way to fix my ankle, and but you're sitting there at the table, and I wanted to have a panic attack. I wanted to freak out. I wanted to get up. I wanted to run away. I wanted to do everything to avoid being in that hospital bed, but they gave me some calm down medicine, which was great. And then once they put me in the operating table, they put some warm blankets on me, which was actually awesome. I'm glad they put the warm blankets on me because it felt wonderful. And then once they put the anesthetic or the sedation stuff through your IV, and next thing you know, I'm out like a light. And when I wake up, everything's done. I mean, that's the way it goes. So I've just been nursing my ankle ever since. I'm on pain meds. I'm on pain meds right now, listeners. So, you know, apologize for any loopy things I may say or that you disagree with. But so there's my excuse. So
I've joined the club. Full disclosure. Hear us.
Here we go. So there you have it. And in a few weeks here or in a month or two, I'm going to see just how good of health insurance I have. So I'm looking forward to those bills.
And, So you've got screws and plates and rods and all that in there. What did you end up with?
Yeah, so on the back of my leg, I actually have a plate with 9 screws. 8 of them go right into the bone, the plate in the bone, and the other screw It looks really funny on the x-ray. It looks like it's just a screw in a place, yep, like they forgot about it. But I think it's just a screw the joints of the fractures together. So
I broke.
I now have metal in me, like many other people.
Is yours the left ankle?
Right ankle.
Right ankle. My left ankle is half cyborg like yours is, where they surgically went in and made it better than it was before. After I broke mine, is similar to yours. I landed on mine with like all of my body weight on a roller rink floor, and so broke both bones relatively cleanly, plus a third one in my foot, and they rushed me in an ambulance to the local hospital that was four blocks up the road, and they x-ray it. It's broken for sure. I know it's broken. I've broken my arm before, so I knew right away, yep, I broke it. Yep, I'm getting wheeled out of here. This is what's happening now. And they gave me through the, I it's very similar to you, but in the ER, they x-ray me, put some warm blankets on, and they say, okay, you've got three options. We're going to, we can try and set it. We're going to have to set it so you can stay awake, and it's going to hurt like heck. But you can stay awake for it if you want. We can anesthetize you, which will be probably down for a total of 3 hours while we bring someone in. We get you down. We get it set. We wake you back up. We bring you back up. All the things. Or the third option is we put you under for about 90 seconds, and we quickly set it, and hopefully we can get it done in time. And so you may wake up, and we might not be done, and it may hurt like heck. Or you may wake up and you won't know any better or different, and it'll be all okay. And I was like, well, let's do the third option. The 90-second option seems fine, because why wait a bunch of hours when we don't have to? And it hurts like heck because it's all out of alignment, and so go for it. And when I woke up from that 90 seconds, it was the best sleep I think I had ever had in my entire life. It was like I woke up well rested and warm and comfortable, and was like, wow, that's amazing. And they wouldn't tell me what it was that they gave me. They originally kind of did, but then they weren't, I'm not trying to be all eager to find any, but I was like, wow, I want to know what this miracle drug is that I just experienced. And it was propofol, which is actually what, Michael Jackson had died of overdosing on. Yeah. And so I was like, well, that explains why they didn't want to be real open and forthcoming with me about what it was that they gave me, but also explains like how easily any one of these things could accidentally just be overused or accidentally abused or administered in weird ways or whatever else. Because
you don't want to end up with the best sleep you never wake up from.
No kidding. But long story short, we are both now better, faster, and stronger than we were before. We're half metal, and I think it makes for better listening for everyone.
Yeah. So tomorrow's my post-op appointment. So I can't wait to get this wrap off to let my foot breathe for a little bit. But they'll probably wrap it up again, and I hope the doc has good words for me and can let me know when I can actually put pressure back on my ankle. I'm probably going to go through some sort of therapy.
Yep. For sure.
Some sort of rehab, but I can't wait.
The thing about
walking around on crutches is hard. Let me tell you,
it is. It is hard. It's scary. And the thing about a broken bone is you don't. It actually, I think, hurts depending on the break less than a sprain would hurt, because a break is just, it's broken now. But if you don't move it, it doesn't really. It might throb and it might feel weird, but just if you leave it alone, you're kind of okay. But a sprain, the muscles are literally torn and ripped and everything is weird, and you can't help but feel the pain of the tissue. So
that was the thing for me is like, I feel like I should be in a lot more pain. If this is a break, I should be in way more pain, but it wasn't like that. And since the surgery, I haven't been in too much pain. I mean, there are days, yesterday was a bad day, but for the most part, it's just every now and then I might feel a little throbbing down there. The worst part of the day is the first part of the day where I'm getting on the bed and blood rushes to the leg. That's the worst part. But for the most part, I haven't been in as much pain as a lot of people anticipated. Yep. So I've been thankful for
that. My period of time on crutches taught me two things. One, like how terrifying that stairs are. We take stairs for granted because they're exceptionally dangerous in like every area that you go. And two, I really didn't have a super good experience being on crutches trying to navigate the planet in general. One, because I was just not confident and terrible with crutches for the first couple of weeks or whatever. But people don't really care that you're on crutches, and so it really made me a much more hyper aware of opening doors for other people, or making sure that there's room for people that are in boots or in crutches or wheelchairs or other things where people just don't normally get out of the way, or they don't treat you with the space that you might need when you're swinging around crutches and stuff. And so that was eye-opening, was just how inaccessible things are, how terrifying it is to go up one or two steps on crutches. If it's, you didn't get to experience it in the winter either. I broke my ankle in January.
That's what I told my wife. I said, thank God there's no snow or ice on the ground.
Yeah, that's tricky. And so that really taught me a lot about just the real day-to-day implications of not having two functional stems to, tool around on.
So there you go, folks. That's just wanted to give you an update as to why I wasn't here, and I've got a cool boot on and these meds are working, and we've got a lot to talk about. There's been a lot of things that have been happening within the past 2 weeks. In fact, we have a huge news story that we'll get to near the end of the show that we'll talk about. The first thing we want to mention today is Equifax. They've been in the news a lot lately. They had a huge security breach, which compromised 143 million customers' personal data. So this includes names, birth dates, social security numbers, addresses, credit card numbers, driver's license numbers, and other sensitive financial information. So Equifax actually created a it wasn't them. As we found out later, they actually hired a PR firm to handle some of this, the crisis that they're going through. And they actually created a website called EquifaxSecurity2017.com. And the site was kind of just thrown up there on the web haphazardly where, if you didn't know any better, you would think that it's a phishing site or that it's not entirely official or represented by Equifax. And there were some issues where, Dan Gooding, Ars Technica security editor, he was taking a look at the website, and he actually viewed the user's JSON endpoint, which shows you usernames and things of that nature. And some people think, well, that's an exposed security risk. But as we found out, that WordPress has always treated the ability to find usernames or to know the username as they consider it public information. It's not really a known security threat. But there's other issues as well, including the SSL certificate they're using doesn't verify its owner, so you don't have any idea as to who you're technically sending your data to this website, which asks for information to see if you could to see if you were among the people who have had your data compromised. And there are all sorts of issues here, and because the site they were using as WordPress and they threw it up haphazardly, There were other editors and people commenting that the fact that it was just WordPress makes it insecure. And so it was kind of giving WordPress a bad rap. But if we look at some of the other people, some people said that the intent wasn't to blast WordPress, but it's just sloppy default admin pages, default Nginx errors, wonky search. Many sites flagged many security programs flight the site as a phishing attempt. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of Equifax just can't seem to get anything right lately. But it's certainly not the fault of WordPress. WordPress fits the bill for setting up a site like this to get information out to people. It's not WordPress per se, but it's the way they put it together that's more the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the when it rains, it pours, I guess, right? And so when you're subjected to something, when something bad happens, it's pretty easy for the reaction to be quick and not fully thought through or implemented. And see it all the time with software or security updates or in government or in any sector, anything. If like damage control and how to react quickly and effectively to when something bad happens is a job in and of itself. And so people start being more critical of the stuff that you do and the decisions you make when you start making obvious mistakes. So when you get hacked and people assume it was something maybe you did or you were negligent of, people are going to start looking for other things you're negligent at. And so a quick off-the-cuff reaction to launch a site and make something that's could in theory be a useful tool that ends up being kind of useless and not very trustworthy, man, it gets people riled up pretty quick. So it's not real great. But it's a bummer that WordPress would catch any flack for that. And the initial reports that I had seen from, I'd have to link back, I'm not sure who it was, but someone had retweeted that ran across my feed, weren't necessarily being real critical of WordPress itself as much as it was about the, like you said, the implementation of it and the surrounding pieces of software or the, you know, you could lock down the author JSON API. If you really didn't want to show authors, lock it down, turn it off, disable it, unset it, remove it. But nobody had time to think about those kind of things. And so when millions of people start looking at something, they're going to tear it apart and be critical of it. So,
I mean, for example, Ars Technica security editor, Dan Gooding, which I mentioned previously, he said that it runs on a stock installation of WordPress, a content management system that doesn't provide the enterprise-grade security required for a site that asks people to provide their last name and all but three digits of their social security number, end quote. And that's sort of like a throw at WordPress. Like, hey, if you're going to use default WordPress, of course it's going to be insecure.
See, I didn't think about it like that. That was exactly the one. It's funny you called that out because he's not wrong. And WordPress isn't designed for those types of enterprise solutions. It just isn't. Out of the box, that isn't what it does at all. What it is a piece of software for conveniently moving data from a MySQL database to HTML and looping through it. So there are tools out there that are specifically geared towards enterprise style application deployments for these kind of things. And he is probably familiar with those more than most of us would be. So he's not wrong in that this WordPress isn't out of the box ready for these things. And that was my interpretation of what he was trying to say. Not that this was bad for, not that WordPress was the wrong thing, or that anyone should expect for WordPress to be the right thing. Being critical of the platform choice doesn't necessarily mean he was being critical of the platform. That's my take on it.
Yeah. So I don't know. It didn't do much to curb the, the notion or the, what do you call it? The sort of the belief that everybody has that inherently WordPress is insecure, which is not true.
That's
not the way it is. So SWF Upload will officially be removed from WordPress. Now, SWF Upload is an open source library that was used in WordPress in 2011 and earlier that it allowed users to upload files. Now, the library was abandoned and replaced with PL Upload in WordPress 3.3, which was also released in 2011. It was the successor to SWF Upload. In 2013, the core team forked SWF Upload and maintained the project, applying security fixes submitted by contributors. So after 6 years of deprecation, the core team has finally decided that SWF Upload will officially be removed from WordPress core. Now, the team searched the WordPress plugin directory and they compiled a list of plugins that contain references to SWF Upload in their code. And there were actually quite a few popular plugins that for whatever reason, still referenced or used SWF Upload in her code, with WP All Import being one of them, MailPoet 2, and some others. Now, there's some false positives, of course, in this list. However, it's interesting to see that even after all these years, plugins are still using SWF Upload, which they should migrate or find a way to use PL Upload. But if we look at a plugin that was on the list, but it was actually turned out to be a little bit of a false positive, was Next Gen Gallery, where they do not use SWF Upload anymore, and they haven't since 2012 when they switched over to PL Upload. But they kept it in there because of backwards compatibility issues.
I mean, so, I call it plup load. I think it's
or plup load.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get that. I mean, I saw on the actual website that they have like a big L on the footer, but I always called it plup load. It just looks like plup load to me.
SWFU plode.
Yes, there's also that too. So I think this is a good opportunity to like the SWF upload. The one of the major reasons why, I mean, aside from it, I mean, one, it kind of wasn't, it fell out of being the right choice because other different, more sophisticated choices came along. But also
activity on the script just kind of disappeared.
Yeah, momentum died, but also it was Flash. And so because we aren't a community of Flash developers, not that we aren't capable of contributing or helping out or working in other technology stacks, but when the larger portion of the audience isn't really 100% totally comfortable or versed in helping it out, then it diminishes the amount of activity and contributions that go upstream. So any dependency, any weird thing that falls slightly outside of the expertise, I mean, JavaScript is becoming better and more, and if it's React or Vue or whatever, we can go down that rabbit hole at any time, but it could be anything. If it's whatever dependency or library that we choose to commit to, we can pull it out years later. We may have to if we just don't get the momentum behind it that we want. And if we aren't a team of experts in guaranteeing the security of one of these dependencies that eventually goes rogue or gets sunsetted or falls away, there's no choice. You gotta do what's right, and you gotta protect the web, and you gotta pull it out.
So the team's working on a way to provide enough backwards compatibility to ensure there are no JavaScript errors and an upload form is displayed instead of embedded Flash. So they're trying to cross their T's and dot their I's when removing this completely. And it also goes to say, hey, at some points WordPress does remove stuff. You know, they just don't keep it forever, as some people believe. So this next bit of news is pretty cool, especially if you have a large plugin and you want to assign members of your community or your user base sort of a support rep role. WordPress.org has introduced a new feature for plugin pages this week that highlights official support representatives. So plugin authors can now find UI for adding support reps under the advanced view on the plugin page. Individual support reps do not have commit access and do not appear on the plugin details page. So what it does is if this person has this role or you set them up as a support rep role, it will actually kind of call out their responses within the forum thread. So you'll see a little sort of like a little banner that says plugin support above their name, and their reply in the forum thread will look different compared to everyone else's. So that's a neat little feature, something that I think has been in the works for a while, probably a side effect of now that the forums are using, updated version of BBPress, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
I think they're still on 2.5. They're not quite on 2.6 yet, at least not the main support forums. But, yeah, so now they have more options. You can start doing cooler stuff.
Yeah, so a little support rep. So if you see, it just kind of gives the plugin author an opportunity to – maybe you see somebody who really enjoys using your plugin and they're helping out other people on the forum. Now you have the ability to give them sort of this little bit more of an official role, and they can stand out now as a contributor in your support pages. I think it's a nifty little feature.
Sure is.
And speaking of plugins, there's some big news that happened with the Display Widgets plugin, which has permanently been removed from WordPress.org due to malicious code. And there's a good bit that goes into the story, but Display Widgets is a plugin that had more than 200,000 active installs, and it was removed by the plugin directory team for having malicious code in it. SEO consultant David Law brought the issues to light within the support forum area of the for the plugin, where he outlined that the code and the things that it was adding and the things that it was doing, all bad stuff. He actually submitted several emails to the WordPress plugin review team, and the plugin has been active, inactive, active on the plugin directory now for the past couple of weeks. And there's a lot of issues that go that get involved here, but apparently somebody had purchased this plugin, the Display Widgets plugin, and they were adding all these bad things to it, like calling home to a third-party server, tracking code. There was some how do you say that?
Obfuscation.
Obfuscation Base64 code, which, by the way, not all Base64 code is bad. There are some legitimate uses for it, but mostly when it comes across in a WordPress plugin, it's generally been used to hide things that you don't want normal people to see. But Formidable Forms, they actually said they were the original owners of the plugin, and they actually published a tweet that says, "We don't have a way of contacting users of our old Display Widgets plugin, but if you are using it, you should uninstall immediately." And there was a official post published by Mika Epstein, who was one of the plugin review moderators. And she says that the plugin was closed and the developer was censored due to repeated guideline violations. She says, "We always lean towards trusting the good nature of humans, explaining where they messed up and giving them a chance to correct behavior. And when that doesn't happen, plugins are removed and developers are removed and banned." So while it looks like, on the outside, it looks like that this certain plugin developer was given a million chances, but what was really going on behind the scenes was an explanation of the guidelines. Okay, now implement these changes that we have suggested. So they give it a try, and maybe they don't do it correctly, or maybe they add even more bad stuff, which in this case they actually did. The developer is actually adding even worse stuff to the plugin code. So eventually they canned it no more. And the plugin review team says they were thinking about possibly allowing other people to adopt the plugin, but now nobody could trust the name. Nobody could trust the plugin. It's already been sullied, and so there's no point. If you are using the Display Widgets plugin, you can upgrade to version 2.7, which is considered safe and doesn't have any of this malicious crap that the other developer put in here. But this raises the issue again of what happens as a user to a plugin if it's removed from the directory for any number of reasons. If you're using that plugin and it disappears, you have no way of knowing unless you search it out or somebody brings the issue to light, like on the forum thread. Mm-hmm. And the plugin review team has already said that they already have this stance where they don't disclose in specifics why certain plugins are removed from the directory. So mm-hmm. we have sort of a catch-22 here, John. And how do you solve this issue?
Well, before I say anything, I think it's important to give huge props and appreciation to the plugin review team and the forum moderation team that is on WordPress.org, because individuals like Mika and everyone else spend an enormous amount of time and energy and resources paying attention to, scrutinizing, maintaining, providing feedback, support, suggestions, developing, tweaking, improving, all of that stuff. And so it is an enormous and often not very talked about or championed job and role and amount of work. And so and easily scrutinized, because when something like this happens, even reading the comments on the Tavern article are all about, like, how often do you think that this happens? And is anybody else looking for these things? And it's a lot. It's not that this information isn't out there. It's that, again, when something bad happens, everyone starts to wonder what other bad things could be happening. And they do such a good job at preventing bad things from happening that it's really, really unfortunate when it does. And so when it does, I think it's good that the feedback that happens goes out to plugin authors or owners should probably stay private as the plugin author is comfortable for keeping it. If something happens and somebody wants to be public with it, it's up to them to decide how transparent that they want to be about what happened. And I think in this case, the original author or someone had reached out and blogged or wrote a post about what had happened or where the links came from or what the story was behind it. But one of the companies I think that actually kind of does an okay job, although occasionally is scrutinized for it, is Apple with an app store. When they have to pull an app because somebody injects something that's malicious or against what their policies or their ordinances or codes of conduct or whatever else that they have. If they violate that, Apple has to make the tough call to pull something out. And a global, you know, in a global cases where something violates laws in one country and doesn't violate laws in another country. And so what does that mean when you have an app update on your iPad and the app, should the app disappear? Does the app go away? I think that's the one thing that WordPress plugins.
I think at the bare minimum, if it's not on the App Store, the app should say, this app is no longer on the App Store. Please consider using an alternative.
I think so, too.
At the very least.
That's the one thing that the WordPress doesn't do yet that I think we're starting to get to a point where there's value in it being there is because not all plugins need to be loaded or available on WordPress.org, it almost starts to be a case where we may need to let plugins opt out of those nags or alerts that say this plugin has been removed, or we need a smarter API to be able to say this plugin is available but is no longer receiving updates and be able to phone that home back to WordPress installs all over the place, because I think we do that on the plugin pages on WordPress.org, but I don't think that we currently push that information back to everybody's client-side WordPresses to say, this plugin is available on WordPress.org, but is no longer being maintained or updated, and that here are the other alternatives for you. So I think there are some improvements that can be done there, but I think if we would have made those improvements years ago, it probably would have been premature. I think we had to get the plugins directory and users and adoption and the web to the place where people are comfortable with automatic updates to need to do these things now, because if we would have done it before, it wouldn't have been right or as important. So I think there are improvements to be made, and we're all identifying them, and they'll happen eventually.
So there are two things here. When a plugin is closed on a WordPress plugin directory, its plugin page disappears entirely. You can't find, you know, it's just gone. It gives you a 404 error search box. So you have, you're kind of left scratching your head. Well, you know, what happened? Where did it go? So There's that issue. And there's a MetaTrack ticket that requests that closed plugins have a public page instead of having them disappear completely. And in a related ticket, Mika Epstein has proposed that when plugins are closed or disabled, there should be a drop down for WordPress.org admins to select the reason why. And she suggested the following as available options: security issue, author request, guideline violation, licensing trademark violations, or merged into core. And, you know, as a user, I'm not expecting a full-blown, full disclosure, detailed explanation as to why a plugin was removed.
Sure.
But I would prefer something over nothing, something as simple as seeing one of these issues. Like, you know, if it's a security issue, okay, you know, I don't need to know exactly what it is, but it would be nice to know if it was one of these reasons: author request, guideline violation. Something's better than nothing, you know, for me as a user. But, you know, we go back to this thing where if I'm using a plugin on my site for years and it turns out that, you know, without my knowledge, if it's probably going to be without my knowledge, it's been removed from the directory because of any number of reasons, I just wish that somehow, some way, there would be. I mean, there are third-party services out there that do. I think WordFence has one where they actually notify you if a plugin is removed from the directory if you're using it. It actually does these checks based on what you have installed versus what's on the directory. So there are services and plugins that tell you about this. But as for your normal user out there, who knows how many plugins have been removed from the directory that they use on their site that they have no idea don't exist anymore.
I think the one thing right now, and what makes all of the threat levels seem higher than they are, is that when you update a plugin, you really don't know what you're getting in the next version of it. And the old version is really gone kind of forever, and trying to roll back is really hard. And I'm not saying that we should have the option to roll back, because that just exponentially complicates.
WP Rollback, baby. Love that plugin.
There, it is awesome, right? But the point is, if you don't have an option of rolling back to something else, and if you don't know what it is that you're going to get in the update, it makes it really risky. And so when a plugin page needs to get pulled down and you're stuck with a new version that may not be safe, you have no recourse really within your WordPress to easily figure out what to do next without dipping into an FTP server, without moving files around, without searching for alternatives. And so a lot of it puts users in a tough spot when we just make a page disappear as if it was never there. But if the threat level was lower, like you're talking about, if it was truly that this plugin was just abandoned, okay, well then having the plugin page say this plugin is no longer under active development, cool. I mean, it beats removing it completely. But if it's a security vulnerability or something that is potentially scandalous, malicious, dramatic in some way, at what point are we overstepping the boundaries of what responsibilities we have when it comes to quarantining these things? If you're, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how we choose to solve that problem. I think Mika's got good thoughts on those tickets too, so we should include those in the show notes probably. Those are both good tickets.
Donate WC is a new initiative by Eins van Essen. I hope I get your name correct. She's a happiness engineer at Automatic, and the initiative aims to provide an opportunity for less fortunate people to attend large WordCamps. Essen was inspired to create the nonprofit organization after realizing how expensive it was to attend WordCamp US 2015, as she did not work for a company that was involved or that could send her there. After factoring in travel, accommodations, food, and drinks, she figures that she spent about a month's worth of income to attend that particular event. So while many WordCamp-focused businesses purchase and give away WordCamp tickets, I see it all the time. You know, they do it as giveaways or contests or what have you. Donate WC aims to create sponsorships, which will include the following: a WordCamp ticket, door-to-door transportation, accommodation, food and drink money, and internet access. Now, to be eligible for a sponsorship, you cannot work for a company that is involved in WordPress or known to sponsor employees to WordCamps. You must be active in the community, and you must either be a speaker or volunteer at the WordCamp you're attending, which I think is a nice way to go about it. So Essen has a crowdfunding campaign through GoFundMe, asking for 1,000 euros, and the initial 1,000 euros will be used to design a logo, register the nonprofit in the Netherlands, and customize the theme for the site and commercial plugins. However, if you can help out by providing any of those with your skill sets, you could reach out to them. I'll have an email. Links will be published in the show notes. And the savings from not having to put money towards those efforts will be used to sponsor more people. So this is a pretty cool initiative. It's going to be based in the Netherlands, aimed at giving less fortunate people an opportunity to attend some of these larger WordCamps. And we'll see where it goes from here. I mean, I think that should have replaced the GoFundMe campaign with Give WP on her site so she could collect all the money without having to pay the fees that GoFundMe takes in for having a campaign there. But it's nice to see this type of initiative take place. It's nice to see something that's outside of the WordPress Foundation. Mm-hmm. Even though I'd like to see that organization create more opportunities or more financial sponsorship opportunities for other people. But, you know, congrats to you, Essen, and I hope the initiative turns out to be a success.
I think she's definitely identified a pain point that others have identified and noticed. And, you know, she's experienced herself firsthand. So it's great to be able to put up a site and solve a problem and really try and bring attention to something that is kind of another grassroots effort to solve this problem. Kudos and hats off to someone trying to do the right thing. I think this is also one of those cases where the comments on the top are,
I was just going to read one.
Like this one.
This person quotes, the initial 1,000 euros will be used to design a logo, register, and nonprofit in the Netherlands. And their comment is, quote, "Looks like Netherlands is an expensive place for this work. You can wrap up an entire site for around $20 with services like Fiverr.com. Okay. Well, you give what you pay for, too.
Well, and so there's another comment in here where, which which is I'll read quickly, but I don't want to give it like a ton of airtime because I don't find it to be all. It doesn't add a ton to the conversation, in my opinion. So Anyway, so it says, I'm confused. Is Donate WC a philanthropic effort or primarily another way to expand the WordPress community? Whatever Donate WC is, its existence illustrates how complicated and expensive it is to build and maintain proper WordPress sites. While many people promote the large WordPress community and WordCamps as proof of WordPress's success, I also see it as proof that if you build and maintain WordPress sites, you're going to need a ton of never-ending help. And so he goes on to comment later about how if Donate WC and Automattic are truly concerned about helping less fortunate people, da 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 da. And so this starts to be one of those interesting things, having worked at Automattic for a brief period of time myself, how easy it is for the company you work for and the stuff that you're passionate about to be conflated in other people's eyes, because the assumption is that because she works at Automattic, that Automattic has some sort of responsibility to actually be involved or help her with this initiative. And whether or not Automattic is comfortable with her having this project is up for them to decide. And what their level of involvement is up to Automattic to decide. And I think it's great that she's even able to have this type of side project while being a happiness engineer at Automattic. But in the comments and in other people's perceptions, does it look like Automattic is endorsing this thing by letting her do this when the reality is that they may, as a company, want to be supportive of it, but are letting her figure it out for herself? Like, we really just don't know. And so, and not that we should know or that it's anyone should even tell anybody, it should be a non-issue. But because everyone is sensitive about these things, it suddenly becomes a partial issue that someone maybe has to address for reasons that aren't really important anyways. Like, this is why it's real easy for companies to say no side projects, end of story. And this is why it's also really easy for other companies to be very open about all side projects for everyone, because we're not affiliated with any of the stuff that you're doing, right? Between a company like Automattic that traditionally, at least in my experience, is like, well, side projects are, you know, we're going to look at them. We want to make sure that they're right. We want to da, 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 da. Whereas other organizations that are maybe a little bit more open, which I don't have a lot of experience with, but my perception is that Pippin and his plugins and his group at Sandhills are a little bit more open about side projects, and Human Made, Modern Tribe.
Even Rocket Genius encourages employees to get into.
Rocket Genius is a good example. And so if you're encouraged to have all these side projects, it makes it pretty clear and obvious that, hey, this individual is trying something out and they're experimenting and pushing the envelope, and that the company that they happen to be employed by approves of this, but don't expect them to necessarily be shoving a bunch of dollars into it or whatever else. It's funny just how easy it is to come up with your own conceptions / misconceptions about who and why and what the motives are and what someone is supposed to do about it. So for all of that said, I wish her nothing but success. And now, because this is a thing that I personally am big into and believe in, I like the idea for use and give, but hopefully maybe I can help with something or we can get other people involved to make this a bigger and better thing.
Let's talk about the elephant in the room, shall we? WordPress abandons React due to patents law. Gutenberg to be rewritten with a different library. So as we've discussed here on this show for a number of weeks, Gutenberg has been written with the React JavaScript library. Calypso has been written with React. There's been a lot of news surrounding the possibility of the BSD/patents clause being removed or changed within the license because of the pressure that the Apache Foundation and other open source contributors are putting on Facebook. However, Facebook has steadfast, firm in their belief with the patent clause. And I believe that was the straw that broke the camel's back. And Matt Mulloway has published a official post during the Automattic Grand Meetup this year. As you know, I don't know, good timing, bad timing, who knows, all planned. I don't know. But he basically said that because of that patents clause, and because they weren't going to budge from it, that Core and Gutenberg will not be written in React. Instead, they're going to take a few steps back. They're going to reevaluate the different JavaScript frameworks that are out there. So we're talking about Vue. We're talking about Preact, which is a React kind of drop-in replacement. And they're going to evaluate things. And on top of that, whatever is chosen for both WordPress Core and Gutenberg, Calypso will also be rewritten in that framework as well.
Yep.
And so there's a number of there's a collective sigh of relief from so many developers when they read this post, and a lot of people have said, "Well, how could it have been? Shouldn't have been a non-issue. Why did he wait so long for this?" And again, he even says that he had a post. Matt had a post written, and he was getting ready to publish it about how they've selected React. React was, you know, the technical choice that they've made, and he had a lot of success with it. But I think after he saw all the pressure that was being applied by Apache and others, that this was the one opportunity where if they were going to change the license and get rid of the patent clause, this was it. And since they stood firm, I think Matt believed, well, you know, it's not – that's it. You know, they're not going to remove it. So it's either React and accept this patents clause and put this sort of burden on the WordPress community and whoever else gets involved with the code, or we don't. And we just stop and we choose something else. And that's the decision he chose. Is they're going to stop, they're going to reevaluate, and it's not going to be React. Your thoughts, John, because you're the JavaScript guru.
That's the first and probably last time that anyone will refer to me as a JavaScript guru. But I think the
collective are you happy with this decision?
I'm me, so I see both sides. I'm 50-50. I may be 49-51, where I am happy that there's a decision in either direction, honestly. The fact that now there is a direction to go, at least we know what direction not to go, and we can still go that direction if we want to for our own projects. If we're working on something and React is the right tool, we should totally use that tool for the job if we're comfortable with it for our own things that we're working on. And I think Matt was very careful, like he is, in really saying that React is still a good piece of software and the team behind it is sound and everything else, and that it really is just this one very specific thing that's in the way. That really is the king, or the linchpin for all of this. And so that is, regardless of technologically or momentum-wise or installation-wise, whether or not Vue or React are good or bad, is kind of irrelevant, at least to me, because we haven't necessarily, no one has committed to any library yet as much as we have at least committed to saying, React is just not going to be the future. And because of this one very specific thing, does that mean 6 months or a year from now that Facebook lifts up on the clause and then everyone goes back to React because it's actually causing them a lack of momentum or user or does it actually stymie the project in a real way because everyone is starting to abandon it and then they suddenly pivot and change and all of a sudden React is a viable alternative again? Is it too little too late? I mean, we guess we really just don't know. But I also think that like Sarah had highlighted in the Tavern post that having Evan Yu really speak out and be a visible part and like in as openly biased way as he can be, that the reasons and the way why he thinks that Vue is really a good fit and choice is really, really excellent. And if we hearken back to earlier days of WordPress and of the really cool and inventive and interesting technology that WordPress had sort of come across in its day, or even that Matt was really interested and curious about. In the early days, Automattic acquired these things, PollDaddy, Intense Debate, After the Deadline, right? Like these were acqui-hires, even Andy Peeling with BuddyPress back in the day. Interesting, good developers, inventive, creative, that Matt would just acqui-hire these things and they would become an Automattic thing. It's a different world where Automatic and Matt and even Evan, you at this point with a library that has the momentum and the success like Vue does, that there isn't some sort of very official relationship between Automatic and Vue or between Matt and Evan to say, hey, we get along, we share a lot of things in common. Let's try and form some kind of relationship here. Whatever the library is, it will be neat to see what the partnership looks like for WordPress Core and for Automatic as an organization. Where, like, I don't know what the relationship is anymore, but Automatic used or helped out or was patching Nginx for a while because they were using it so to push the boundaries of web hosting for WordPress.com. Where I don't know if there was any real monetary like business relationship aside from the pro version of Nginx that maybe you can get or support or whatever else. But Automatic had props and credit in Nginx releases for improving it. So what does this look like in the future for Vue or Preact or whatever the libraries are? I think that will be cool to see. And it's kind of a bummer that it isn't React because of the momentum and the exposure that React is really bringing to front-end web development right now. And so, I don't know. It's like...
I want to read this quote to you because I think it comes from... To me, it's an example of Matt being a good leader. And it is, he says, quote, "I think Facebook's clause is actually clearer than many other approaches companies could take. And Facebook has been one of the better open source contributors out there. Absolutely. But we have a lot of problems to tackle, and convincing the world that Facebook's patent clause is fine isn't ours to take on. It's their fight," end quote.
Yep. The interesting thing about Matt saying these things and publishing these things is his choice to do it from his own blog instead of from the make.wordpress.org sites or anything else. And so if it was because he's wearing his personal hat and these are his opinions, or because he's that's just happens to be where he published it, or because he doesn't want it to be heavy handed from the make.wordpress.org site and look like it just comes out of any old place. And also because it happened while he was on the Automatic Grand Meetup, and for appearance's sake, does it look like Automatic made a decision that they're then dictating back onto the WordPress.org project? I think it's interesting he chose to post this on his own personal blog for a bunch of reasons that are most of us would never need to consider, right? He has to pick which outlet that he puts this on. Very tactfully and specifically, so that the reaction is positive as it really can, as positive as it should be as he's written it. So I agree. It was very well written and intentionally positive in all directions, and still. And then I like Jeff Atwood's reply at the. the insanely optimistic rewrite. So I will curious to see what the timeline is on those things, and if Jeff comes back and what he has to say about it later.
The official JavaScript discussion meetings that were being held has been canceled for this week because a lot of the team members involved are either traveling or out of the office. I think a lot has to do with the grand meetup. People getting back, or they're out of town. So they're going to have one next week, and they're going to talk about, again, core JavaScript technicalities involved with each one. But I also wanted to bring up the fact that community members involved in the discussion are keen to emphasize, or have emphasized, that the framework selected will have an impact on the greater WordPress product ecosystem far beyond its use in Gutenberg, and are not eager to play it down as a simple technical decision. And I think it's important to realize that if Core selects a framework, that framework automatically gets this insane boost in visibility, contributions. I mean, it really would elevate it. And I think somewhere, behind the scenes, Evan Yu, I think, he's just hoping, really hoping that Vue is the framework of choice, because it could really elevate Vue way past whatever.
So I think it's Vue.
Or Vue.
Yeah.
What did I say?
Vue. Voodoo. Unless you're, well, unless you're just saying, unless you've got a weird like Midwestern accent that I don't have.
Voo. So voo, like zoo.
Yes.
View, like a web view. But we talk about some of the benefits of React is there's so many resources out there to learn it. There are so many other people who are already using it in so many different ways. But if WordPress would choose a Voo, I think it could. Vue. Whatever. Vue. I'll just call it V. No, there's probably another framework called V. But anyways, whatever framework is chosen could eclipse anything that's going on with React because simply it's WordPress.
So I think that's what the perception is. I think, though, there will be a little bit of that, but I don't know that that necessarily really truly happened with libraries like TinyMCE or like Backbone or Underscore. jQuery maybe, but jQuery was already it was already independently successful. And so it being in WordPress was kind of just maximally convenient for everyone that was already going to be using jQuery regardless. And so I think, though, that we have an opportunity to refer to the new post editor as Vutenberg.
Okay. How long have you been thinking of that one, sir? Come on.
I'm just saying we could, there could be there's a chance there. I'm just saying. Codename Vutenberg.
All right. So, and by the way, we haven't really talked about it. We might mention it in next week's show, but Sarah Gooding did an excellent post called Why Vue.js Creator. Evan Yu thinks Vue could be a good fit for WordPress, and it's a pretty good article.
It's a good article.
Encourage everybody to take a look at that. So that's going to wrap it up for the news. However, we could end within an hour, but I'm not going to because I want to ask you, there are two things I want to talk about. The first is you got into a kerfluffle, if I should say so, about blind speaker submissions as it relates to WordCamp US. And I wanted to ask you on the air, why is speaker submissions or more or less speaker rejections an issue with you, or is it not an issue? Well, why did you make a big deal about it? What's the
well,
problem?
I tried not to make a big deal out of it, but I know that other people do feel strongly about this. And so when depending on how far back this goes and then how deep I want, how open I want to be about my own paranoia, I guess, is...
We're talking about... So the first WordCamp US was in 2015, and you've applied to speak at all the WordCamp USs, right?
So I haven't... yes. And I have... And I'm not even saying that I give great, good talks or that anything I have to say is worth listening to. So it's not... I am really trying hard to not have this be about anything to do with me or how I give a presentation. I like to think that I do an okay job, but I don't think that means that I deserve anything over literally anybody else ever when it comes to WordCamps or presentations or talks or anything. But for me, at least at WordCamp San Francisco, for the first few years, it was I went from giving updates on BuddyPress and BBPress and giving talks about the state of multi-site or the state of things we were working on or cool stuff that we were doing. And I like to think that those things weren't because of my employment at any company at the time, but because of my ability and and the value that I could bring to an event like that. And so since 2013, I haven't been involved in WordCamp US or San Francisco like at all. And any time that I've tried, for me, I haven't. That has not been well received or just completely ignored or in general without any real feedback. And so I had heard a few years ago that there was something with one of my talks that someone had picked that wasn't that was pulled out at the last minute, or that people wanted me to give a talk and then the talk was pulled out of the lineup. And I was like, well, that seems unfortunate, but I haven't heard that. No one's given me any of that feedback. So I guess I'll just keep applying or keep hanging out and keep attending, because I want to see all of the contributors and friends and talk shop and hack on stuff and get stuff done. And so for me, WordCamp San Francisco or US was kind of a capstone on a year's worth of contributing to core or across multiple competencies or improving WordPress.org or security or these things. And it's kind of a bummer to not be able to share any of that stuff at WordCamp US anymore. And
are you expecting the organizers of WordCamp US to write you a detailed letter on why your session was rejected?
No. And I think that that's impossible to do. But what I did receive was like a late night, like, canned response that's like, we receive hundreds of things and we can't pick you all and try harder next year kind of email. Or it was like, I don't know what more to do. Like, I don't know how to be any better or different or contribute any more across literally all walks of what it is that is happening on in the community to know what more to do. And so for me, it was like, okay, well, I get that this email isn't necessarily geared for any one particular person. It is intentionally vague. But I was like, well, I really want to know now, like what did I not do correctly? What should I have done differently? What does someone have to do to give the right kind? Like, what am I doing wrong? Like, if I really truly am not writing good speaker submissions, or if I'm not picking good talks, part of me really wants to know, like, how can I as an individual improve in the WordPress community to be able to confidently say, like, yeah, I totally am in tune with it. I am talking about the things that people want to hear about. I'm working on the things that people think need attention. And I'm able to summarize them and talk about them in a way that is effective. Because if I'm not being effective, then I'm not doing a good job. And then I want to do a good job, but I want to help others also do a good job. And so it's a lot of those kind of things. And so then when I replied back and to that email, which just went, I think, to us@wordcamp.org, and just very shortly said, like, oh, okay, well, thanks. It's like, sorry to hear that, or thanks for the thing. And what feedback do you have to improve for next year?
Ooh, I bet you gave it to him, too.
No, not from me for them to improve. But I'm asking for their feedback on how I can improve my submissions, because I submitted three talks. I submitted a lightning talk for BB Press. I submitted a talk about what I'm learning as a government village trustee where I live and how I think that applies to open source software development and community and everything else. And then I applied for just like a very general spiritual, philosophical, somewhat TEDx style over the top talk, just about communities and software and communication and perception and contributing and lots of things in general. And so I got no feedback about any of those things. I feel like I have unique and cool, fun perspectives to share on, you know, BB Press development, which is something that's like fun and empowers a lot of people to support their plugins on WordPress.org. And the government thing, I think, is a unique perspective that people have seemed interested in when I've talked about them at other WordCamps. And so it was stuff I was kind of excited. Like, as time went on, I was like, wow, I've got a lot of good ideas for a cool way that I could do this talk or any of these talks. And then to get the like anonymized letter or email is like, well, that took the wind out of a lot of sails, like, again, for the fifth year in a row. Well, that sucks. And so then it was like, well, what do I need to do to improve this? What should I be doing? And then the response was, well, we're going to give some more generalized feedback in a YouTube video, and you should look out for that. I was like, well, I'm not looking for that. Like, I want to know what more do I have to do? And I don't know that I've received that feedback yet either, really. But it's also when I tweeted that, which I should know better than to do, I guess. But then
there's John having another bit on Twitter.
It's not like that though. I don't feel like that when these are the words that I'm saying. I don't feel that kind of frustration. It really is genuinely like I want to know how I can be better and help other people be better too. But I don't, for some reason, people don't read the words that way. So the people started reaching out to me privately.
For WordCamp US, it was a blind vote.
Yes.
And would it make you feel any different to know that almost a quarter of the speakers, nearly 25% of them are onomaticians?
Huh. I didn't look at that. I don't know that. But okay.
My bad then.
Not particularly.
That's 75% are not onomaticians, so look at it that way.
It doesn't surprise me because Automatic is a company that can afford to hire top-tier talent and good and people, and they're going to be really good, talented individuals that have unique perspectives on things. And so a company like Automatic is, of course, going to naturally have a high showing at an event like WordCamp US. So that on the surface, that doesn't surprise me at all. And could easily be unrelated to Matt or Automatic or whatever the Illuminati type stories are that people are going to want to dream up. So that does not cross my mind as like a viable app. Well, I'm not going down that road because I don't think that is valuable time spent. But the blind selection is like depending on who you talk to and why and what that means. I know Morton has good thoughts and opinions on the pros and cons of a blind selection in certain circumstances in different ways. So I can't even pretend to paraphrase the depth and research that he's done on these things. So, but long story short is I think I kind of agree with Morton that a completely blind selection for something like this is not there's not enough context to really accurately pick who and why. Plus, if you're totally blind, it does accidentally remove the humanization part of who the people are that are going to give really good talks, right? Like, if someone like John Maeda, who I'm assuming is giving a talk at WordCamp US because he's an Automatic employee, he's a talented designer, he's been around for a long time, he deserves to give a good talk. But what was so good about his talk descriptions and his submissions that mine wasn't? Because how do I be as good as John Maeda, right? Like, how do you...
If it's a blind selection, does your proposal even matter?
In a way...
What are they selecting? What is the criteria that the blind selection is based off of? That's like...
And the selections are... They're only going to be so blind because anyone that knows you, anyone that's read my blog or tweets for 10 years now can easily pick out my writing style and who I am or whatever else. And so blind, but not really blind, because the only person who's going to submit a BB Press 2.6 development talk is going to be me. And so it's easy to identify that the person who submitted these three talks in a row is the same person. And so it's not really as blind as it may look or feel or be. And so my Carrie and I joked that I could very easily just ghostwrite something and come up with a pseudonym and another personality and contribute under a different name and A/B test this myself and see, like, is it me? Did I do something wrong? And if it is, then that's possible. But if it's not, then... why not provide a little bit more criticism or feedback or something else to a little bit to say we didn't pick it because we don't like BB Press and we don't care about it. You know what? At least then I'd know. Or we don't think that your government perspective is really all that relative to to WordPress or to the topics that we're looking for, because we're looking for these things. Like, it would be nice to know these submissions that you want, the things you want to talk about don't fit for these reasons, and move on.
Have you reached a point now where you're not even going to bother submitting speaking topics or whatever for WordCamp US 2018?
Well, no, but what I want to know here's, I want to know that if I really am just not capable of submitting the types of talks that anyone thinks matter at WordCamp US, then I will stop submitting talks because I do not want to add additional workload to other people that is totally pointless anyways. Don't read my submissions because I'm only going to cause a bunch of work for someone to have to review and potentially maybe provide some feedback on. That doesn't matter anyways. And so I would just like to know, like, hey, John, like, we don't think you should give talks at WordCamp US ever, and so don't bother. And I would go, okay, that seems kind of weird, but I'm okay with avoiding the additional workload because maybe I'm more useful in a different place. Maybe I should sit at the happiness bar and talk about BuddyPress and BBPress the entire time. I honestly just want to be in a position to do the most good. And if that's not on a stage sharing my thoughts or opinions or perspectives, I am comfortable with that. And I think it's important that other people all over the place, every day, all the time, deserve and have the opportunities to do these things and grow and achieve things and feel good and all that kind of stuff too. So it really isn't, I know it sounds not right, but it isn't about me. It's about, like, are there people that maybe feel like I feel or that are in a situation that I'm in that either aren't comfortable or don't have a big dumb mouth like I have that don't.
Peter Frampton.
Do you feel like I do?
Yeah, there we go. That's so Peter Frampton.
Like I know that. So the people did reach out privately. And that was the part where I was like, well, crap. Like now I want to, there is a responsibility here to make sure that if there is something happening that isn't right, that we identify if that's true. We connect people together that need connecting to try and fix some of these problems. And when they reach out and they say, I was on the speaker selection team and my talk was vetoed, or I know people that were on the speaker selection team who don't want to do it again because they don't like the way that it went down. And these are like people who are afraid. They don't want to say out loud that something happened that they're uncomfortable with because they're afraid of anybody, of the backlash or somebody reaching out or somebody. It's sort of potentially career suicide in a way where
it could create some kind of domino effect where,
yeah,
now if you say this, well, now we have to come out and explain all of this and all.
And I don't want it to be like that. And I don't think anyone else wants it to be like that. We want it to be happy and ethical and fun and free and easy and all those things. And so if someone feels like their opinion as a speaker selector wasn't valued, then you don't know. And I don't know the story and I wasn't there and I don't know the narrative and I can't check the facts. And it's he said, she said, and it's speculative and it's all these things. And so there's very little that will come from it. And so it's a lot of time and energy spent for something that isn't going to change anyways. And then let's say you get the person who's upset together with person who upset them. They are going to hash out. They should have the privacy and the opportunity to hash it out however they choose to. But that doesn't mean that anything changes or gets better or is different. And so even are they willing to do it? Are they afraid still? Is anything going to happen? And so it's long story short. Is it
see folks, listeners out there, this is the beauty of me and J-Trip on the show. You get to hear the behind the scenes thoughts and things going on. You know, I just wanted to make sure you weren't having another hissy fit, as it was described by some people. I just want to make sure you're okay.
Oh goodness, I'm okay. I'm always okay. Gosh,
all right.
Are you kidding? All right. I'm always okay, but I don't want it. I don't ever want this to be like a hissy fit thing either. Because that's not what it is. That's not how I feel about it.
I know. Every time you go on Twitter and you say things, you're coming at it from a point of view that nobody else recognizes. So, hey, it's okay. So I want to wrap up the show.
Maybe it's okay.
I want to talk about one more thing here before I get to my pick of the week and we wrap up the show. But you wanted to mention BB Press performance improvements.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I blogged about it. I thought it was worth talking about because it was so BB Press 2.6, which has been in development for like 1,000 years now, but it's okay. Is
1,000 JJJ.
Yeah, 1,000 days maybe is probably. Maybe that's what I should have titled my WordCamp US submissions, like 1,000 days of BB Press. But for, I mean, 2.5 has gotten some stuff backported to it. It's been super stable all across WordPress.org and everybody else's sites, so it's not even really an issue. But I had, there were some neat things in BB Press 2.6 that I had been thinking about for a long time that I blogged about and that are kind of neat little hidden performance improvements that I know that some plugins back in the day took a lot of inspiration from early BB Press stuff. Custom post types were new, taxonomies were new, and integrating with rewrite rules and caching and all these things. Like, we all got a bunch of stuff for free in really useful ways. And so plugins like Easy Digital Downloads and WooCommerce and GiveWP as being a fork and everything else, they have little bits. I can look at the code in those plugins and see little pieces of inspiration that they took from what BB Press did and how it works and everything else. And so because BB Press is such a strange, or not strange, but like it works differently than a WordPress blog post. Anyways, long story short, I found some neat little performance tweaks for the way that topics and replies and things in a forum are looped through and are prefetched. And I wanted to bring it up, one, because I think it's technically kind of neat, even though looking at the code, it's very, very obvious that why this is necessary and how it benefits. But for lots of other plugins like Easy Digital Downloads or WooCommerce, where you're doing related downloads or related products, or you're linking products together via taxonomies, or you're maybe building a membership site for not using BuddyPress or using a different membership plugin where you've got relationships between many, many users, that WordPress isn't always designed or architected to handle every single one of those use cases in the most performant way that it could. It does a really great job once you've gotten those things, but that there are little hidden benefits if you choose to own some of that experience, which I don't know that a lot of plugins have ever needed to do yet. And so all that happens in BB Press now is we look through related posts and post authors and we prefetch all of those. We query for all of them at once. We load them in the cache, and now we only ever hit the database once for all those related posts and users, whereas before we had hit them every single time if they weren't already in the cache. And so we took what could have been 30 database queries and turned them into one, two times over. And so a BB Press page that would maybe run 120 queries before now runs less than 30 or 40 because of like really two very simple and obvious optimizations that, one, I kind of thought that I had already done, and two, I even really trusted that WordPress was doing this on the fly in a way that I thought it was smart enough to do. And I knew that it wasn't. But and so for me, it was kind of one of those things where it made me really wonder what other plugins are utilizing post types or talking about users and using core functions that may have taken inspiration from early BB Press code that have these little hidden optimizations in them. I know GiveWP actually has a few places where it can improve some object caching type stuff, but I don't know that it has it in this way. And so other related posts plugins or plugins like Posts to Posts that are really popular that could be pre-caching a lot of those posts in neat ways. I don't know. So if listeners are out there that are developers that have used post types and taxonomies to build and do cool things, either check out my blog post or look at what was coming in BB Press 2.6 and see if there's anything cool that you can do to make it better.
You have to give me a link so I can link it up in the show notes so people can check it out from there.
I will do that.
Okay, so our picks this week. I have one. I don't know about John, but I have one. It is actually next Saturday, September 30th, is WP Translation Day 3. So you may ask, well, what is that? Well, it's a 24-hour global event dedicated to the translation of the WordPress ecosystem. So that's core, themes, and plugins. So there'll be 24-hour translating marathons that provide inspiration and training to both coders and translators on localizing and internationalizing through live talks and local meetups. And the also cool thing about this is September 30th has also been designated as International Translation Day by the United Nations. So it's I don't know how much more global you can get besides that. So it'll start at 0000 to 2359 UTC of September 30th. It will be a series of live sessions that will be aired live via Crowdcast. It will be free, and as we've seen from previous translation days, it's really cool to sort of observe all these people and all these different parts of the world gathering in these places on this one day via online, offline, and just translating the heck out of WordPress in their language or translating their favorite plugin in their native language. And there's been a lot of ground that's been covered in the previous two translation days when it comes to text that are translated or localized or what have you. So really cool initiative that started out with the Polyglots team. They're on their third version of it, and it just seems to get better and better, and they seem to get more people around the world to participate in this day. So if you have an opportunity next Saturday, visit WPTranslationDay.org. Of course, I'll have it linked up in the show notes, and you can find out all the information. And you know, just check in from time to time, and who knows who you'll see or from who or where at in the country, or not in the country, but in the world, translating WordPress. It's really cool, nifty event.
I've Buddy Press and Media Press have both received a lot of translations via this annual event, and even a couple of my littler plugins that people had used had chimed in and offered up translations for stuff. So it's hugely awesome that so many people, there's a day specifically for it. I think it really does a good job at bringing awareness to something that has a huge need within the community, and that so many people are continuously rallying behind it. It's awesome.
So do you have a pick this week, or am I going to skip you?
So I have two picks, only because I can't remember if one of them was my pick already. I might have picked it. Did I pick local from the folks at Flywheel? Have I talked about that at all yet?
No.
So,
if it has something to do with human made, you've probably talked about it. But local by Flywheel, no.
So Flywheel being a WordPress hosting company that I'm sure we've probably talked about before, they're on the WordPress.org hosting page.
And local used to be Pressmatic by Clay Griffith.
It did used to be Pressmatic. And so they have purchased, acquired, rebranded, made a page for it, local.getflywheel.com. But my wife, Carrie, has been dabbling with some local development and helping do some WordPress support. And so it was easy to get her spun up with MAMP originally because it was like a one-click turnkey thing, and it's self-contained, it doesn't do anything, she can leave it alone, whatever else. And so, but it started being goofy, and like MySQL wouldn't start. It's like she's in there digging at anything, it just broke. And then it wouldn't keep running, and I just didn't have the opportunity or the time to like contribute to MAMP and figure out what was wrong and bring an upstream patch or do anything. And a long time ago, I had paid for a MAMP Pro license, and I was like, well, I'm not going to try and go down that route again. And then I had seen someone had asked about what's hot in WordPress local development for not the person who's going to use VVV for things, and someone had recommended local. And I was like, okay, well, I know that local had good bones in it from what it used to be before, and the team behind it at Flywheel is amazing. They're all super nice, and they do a good job. So let's check it out. And it's actually pretty dope. Like, it works really great. The UI is really nice. It comes with, and we'll go out and reach out and get different versions of PHP and MySQL and Nginx and whatever else that you want. And it's like super intuitive and straightforward and powerful and fun. And it's a pretty cool way to get WordPress running locally, like many WordPress sites, different instances, multi-site, like right out of the box. And it's free and open source out on GitHub somewhere. And it like was a very nice experience using Local from the folks at Flywheel. So that's my first pick.
I've not used Local by Flywheel, but I have used – it's actually been a while. But if I was going to pick something, I like Desktop Server. I like the way they have their set. I like the way they have their setup.
Yep. I haven't checked it, and they're nice folks too, but I haven't looked at Desktop Server in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Check it out. Yep. And my second pick, which is more or less a shout-out, is that Matt Cromwell and the folks over at GiveWP are going to do Give Live on October 11th. But I don't know that they've pushed a ton of marketing and stuff out there. So this is me.
This is the first I've heard of it. So.
And so I'm going to try and help them out. And so that's my spoiler, I think.
What is it? What is Give Live?
I think it's just a bunch of presentations and talks about like donating and community and donations and the software and what we've done with it and those kind of
things. Oh, Matt Cromwell, what are you doing? Get on the ball. Tell me about it.
I'm spoiled. Maybe this is like a spoiler tag.
Yeah, maybe I'm not
supposed to be talking about
this, after the show, you'll go find out. Oh, this was embargoed.
Yeah, and then I guess, you know, there's lots of other things that are coming up in October besides WordCamps and Cobble Press. And
speaking of October, WooCommerce 3.2 is scheduled to be released on October 11th. So we're going to bring on Cody Landefeld, our correspondent for WooCommerce, and he'll be on to give us a rundown of WooCommerce 3.2 and what's involved with it. And we'll also have him back on November 1st because WooConf is taking place in Seattle at the end of October, and he'll be there. So he'll be on the show November 1st to give us a rundown of WooConf. And I imagine they'll probably do a State of the Woo. That seems to be the place to do it. And he'll give us all the inside info on the event, what it was like, and the future of WooCommerce. So it's pretty cool to have a guy, dedicated person, who's all involved in WooCommerce to kind of tell us everything that's going on there. So it'll be cool to have him back on the show.
Sure will.
And what other events do we have in October? You say Cabo?
I brought up Cabo Press. So that's like Chris Lima's mastermind conference. He started his own thing a couple of years ago now. And I've always, I mean, it's Cabo. It's in Cabo San Lucas. So, I mean, it's amazing and everything else. But
The developers and business owners who can afford it and have been there before, they love it. And tickets sell out for that event pretty fast. But, hey, it's Cabo. So.
And so, like, on the list of really great events that always have really good reception and feedback are, you know, that I haven't gone to, Pressnomics.
I also saw word that I think it's Chris Lema and a few other people are going to organize another beach press. So another beach house event where you stay at a beach house and kind of relax and do WordPress stuff throughout the week. So it's going to be in Oregon this time. I'm not sure.
And Aaron and I think Mendel are doing like a camping.
Oh yeah. Camp press down in Oklahoma.
Yep. I would hurt myself if I was on camping and zip lining and swimming and everything else. Like I would be a liability in an event like that, but it would be really fun to go and hang out with everyone and be in those places. But those are the only ones that I can think of. Cabo Press is coming up. And so,
there's also a, in November 3rd through the 4th, the inaugural Cabin Press. Take press down in Florida, not too far away from, is it WordCamp Orlando? I think it's WordCamp Orlando, I believe. So there you go, November 3rd through the 5th.
Then I'll be at WordCamp Ann Arbor the weekend of the 13th and the 14th, I think, is when that is, which ironically I think ended up being the same weekend as what is now this year's WordCamp Milwaukee, which has gotten like a very late start, I think, because of venue, other unrelated issues. And so I just got an email from one of the organizers that WordCamp Milwaukee is happening, but it's the same weekend as WordCamp Ann Arbor, so I won't be able to go.
Dun, dun, dun.
I know.
Oh, sad trombone. So there you have it. That's a list of some upcoming WordPress events. You can always check out WordCampCentral.org for the official WordCamp events. As for the other events, there used to be a website where you could see a list of other WordPress, as long as they submitted them to. I can't name it off the top of my head, but yeah, there's other sites out there for other WordPress-related events that aren't WordCamps, but they have to actually submit them to the site and actually just see them. Anywho, boy, we covered a lot of stuff today. You know, whether it's broken ankles or whether it's Gutenberg, Voohoo, Yoohoo, Yahoo, Avenue, I don't know.
Are you talking about Conferencia? Is that the website you're thinking of that has all the from David Bitson?
Yeah, that's the one. That's one from David Bitson. That might be the one. I thought there was another one. That's it. I guess that's going to do it for this week's episode of WordPress Weekly. I'm going to down some more pain meds because that's fun and makes me drowsy. And I'm in pain. So, I mean, talking to Triple J here, I'm in pain. So I don't know if it's connected, but I'm just messing with you. It's okay. I mean, I missed you, buddy. I really did.
I missed you too.
I think our listeners missed us as well. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on WPTavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, JeffrO0. And John?
Apparently, if you want to hear me bellyache and whine about, real selfish, obnoxious, terrible things, you can follow me on Twitter at JJJ. But don't do that. Instead, you can read my blog where I talk about more technical and relevant and happy fun things at jjj.blog, or see the work that I do on GitHub at JJJ.
Oh, look, it's Hissy Fit Jacoby. How you doing, John? All right, so we're going to... That'll do it for this week's episode. Everybody enjoy the rest of your week. Please stay safe out there between the earthquakes and the hurricanes and the
don't
fires.
Go chasing any reindeer out in your backyard in the middle of the
please,
night.
Please don't chase any animals from your yard. I learned that the hard way. And the deer, I swear to God, the deer was laughing at me as I ran away. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday for another episode of WordPress Goodness. Until then, take care, everybody. So long.
Bye, y'all.